And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and my guest today is Morgan Matson, the author of Since You've Been Gone and Second Chance Summer, the winner of the California State Book Award. Morgan is here to talk about her latest book, The Unexpected Everything, published by Simon & Schuster. Morgan introduces us to Alexandra Walker, known as Andy to her friends and family. After her mother's death when Andy was 12, she's been pretty much raising herself. Her dad, a representative in Congress, and the life they've lived under the spotlight since she was 3, has taught her everything. And planning is key. Her future begins with this summer, and it's all laid out. The perfect internship and amazing friends. Unfortunately, all that was before the scandal about her father broke. In The Unexpected Everything, Andy Walker says, "I liked always knowing where I was and how to get where I was going." How did a 17-year-old girl end up with such discipline?
I've always been interested in politicians' children. I'm sort of fascinated by the political sons and daughters. I think it's such an interesting thing because you're part of the package. You know, you're on stage at the conventions and you're in the ads and you're at the rallies, but you never really got a choice in the matter. So I thought it would be very interesting to explore someone who, from a very young age, learned to always think 5 steps ahead and always be aware of what she was saying and how it could affect her father, the congressman, and, you know, always sort of be monitoring herself. And so I thought it would be very interesting to write a character like that who was always kind of learned to be a little guarded from a young age.
Well, she describes herself as part of the Alex Walker brand. Mm-hmm. And that has to be so difficult. Even her friends are aware that she has this brand mm-hmm. that she has to live up to. Did you do any research on other politicians and how their kids are affected?
I did a little bit of research. I went to college in Los Angeles, and so I made some friends whose parents were in the entertainment industry. And so that was kind of the same thing, is that, you know, when you met someone whose father was a very well-known actor, they're very guarded with you because you already have an opinion of who their father is and think you know something about her, even though you might not. And I think this one friend was always a little worried if someone wanted something from her, if they actually wanted to be her friend. So I think I drew more on that than anything else, this feeling of someone who was a little bit on guard when you met them. And then, you know, as you got to know them, would lower that mm-hmm. guard a little bit, but was sort of came in also knowing that, you know, if she had a bad day and snapped at you, then everyone would be like, oh, I met his daughter and she's, you know, such and such. That she always had to sort of be presenting a public face, even mm-hmm. if it was just a normal interaction.
And in that public face, like I said, her girlfriends are very aware of that. These mm-hmm. girls are much more mature than I was at age 17, uh-huh. I think, and much more savvy about things, and they get along so much better. How did that happen?
I was thinking about this when I was working on the book, is that especially with the rise of social media, sort of everything's kind of out there. And I feel like we all see those stories of some governor's 14-year-old son posts something on Facebook and then it's on the national news. And it's sort of like, will this damage his mother or father's career? And you should be able to post things on Facebook that are stupid when you're 14. I mean, that's just sort of part of being a 14. Kid. But it's just, I think with the sort of rise of social media, everyone's a little bit more under the microscope. So I sort of wanted to explore that a little bit. And then with the friends, I realized I hadn't written about a friend group yet. And I was part of a friend group in high school. There were 6 of us. And it's such an interesting thing with a group of girls, and probably guys too, but this was just my experience. There's always the 2 people who are better friends with each other. And then there's the one person you might not actually hang out one-on-one with that much, and sort of the dynamics of a group I really wanted to explore. So that was very much based on sort of taking inspiration from my friend group in high school. And I'm still friends with these girls, and one of them read it and called me and was like, is that what happened with wasn't that? And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't think you would actually read this. Like, sorry for taking subplots of our lives and putting them in a novel.
Oh, I think she was probably flattered as well, you know, to realize that it was important to you.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now, Andy's got her summer plan.
Yes.
I mean, she's got everything planned.
Yes.
She's got a list mm-hmm. and she's checking it off. But then her dad is involved in a political scandal, mm-hmm. and that changes her whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But she never tells him that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until way, way yeah. later. Why did she not go to him and say, look, it's all your fault?
I really liked sort of diving into their relationship, and I think it became one of those things where she wanted him to notice or ask. And it became one of those things where it's like, well, if you don't care enough to ask me, I don't have to tell you, kind of thing. I think that was the reasoning I was thinking of from her point of view.
And really, Andy's been on her own pretty much since her mother died when she was 12. And even then, her dad almost used that as a political kind of forum.
That wasn't my intention. That it sort of, I think, accidentally became political at her mother's funeral. But I don't think it was ever intended to be, from his point of view. This book is really about three things, I think. It's about the father-daughter relationship, it's about her relationship with Clark, and it's about her relationship with her friends. And it was really interesting to dive into the father-daughter relationship, because I really had to be able to see both sides of it and sort of be sympathetic to both characters and kind of understand where they were both coming from, even though it was Andy's point of view. Because I think in the first draft, I was a lot harder on her father. And I think he was a lot more sort of one-dimensional. And my editor, I think, sort of pushed me to be a little bit more... No one was, you know, trying to make a bad relationship. It just sort of evolved over time. And so I really can play sort of both sides of this equation. I was like, no, he didn't mean to. But yeah, it was just sort of, you know, you make one small choice and then it ends up sort of snowballing. And I think sort of the two of them had gotten to this point 5 years later where they never intended to be, but had to sort of find their way out of it again.
Mm-hmm. But he's actually making decisions based on polling. Mm-hmm. He changed her school because of that. Is that normal?
I would think so. I mean, I just feel like you see all these scandals all the time where someone finds out that someone has a nanny and it's like, well, don't they care about their children? You know, I mean, just sort of these personal things that become political fodder. Yeah, I did sort of want to show that she'd kind of been buffeted by these political wins and decisions kind of made for her before she could make them on her own.
I referred to it earlier, but her dad's political scandal, she was actually going to intern in a pre-med program. And then because of the scandal, they actually pull that away from her. So she's got to find a job at the last minute.
Yeah.
Why did you pick the job that you picked for her?
So I definitely knew I wanted something that seemed like not at all going to be helpful to her because she's very focused and very, you know, has sort of been planning out her college resume since elementary or middle school, probably. I mean, you really do have to get into these internships and jobs, and they're so competitive. So at the last minute, there's no chance she's going to have anything sort of good left. So I wanted it to be something that she was going to be disappointed with. She'd look at this. This is going to not benefit me at all, because she's only sort of looking at her summers as a means to an end. But I didn't know what it was, and I was sort of scrolling through all these different things and trying to figure out what it was. And I have a dog, and so I'd be walking my dog. And I'd be like, what could her job possibly be? And then one day I looked down and it was like, oh, it could be this thing that I'm doing right now. She could be a dog walker. So a lot of that came from walking my own dog. But for a while, my dog had a dog walker whose name was Maya. You know, she'd come to the house and she'd pick up my dog and there'd be all these heads out the window of her car and they'd all go on a hike. And I was like, oh, that looks like fun. It's probably incredibly difficult to hike with six dogs, but it always looked like she was about to have a great time. And so I was like, oh, that'll be a fun job to give her, sort of the last thing she expected.
And even in her worst moment, when she's going to talk to the guy that pulled her internship, she meets one of her clients, and it's a big fluffy dog, and it kind of changes the course of her summer. Clark is the guy's name that has this dog, and he's obviously out of control with it.
Yeah, Birdie, the dog in the book, weighs 150, or is a big Great Pyrenees. I have a very small dog. I mean, my dog weighs 25 pounds. But I'd go hiking with this friend, and she was always so nervous about my 25-pound, very gentle terrier. And it was just sort of, if my dog saw a squirrel, she'd be running along after my dog. And it's like, no, just stop, and the dog will stop. Like, you're in control of the situation. So that was sort of where that came from, of someone who was sort of utterly flummoxed by dogs and not sure what to do.
And she does find out that it's not really his dog. It's,
right.
He's sort of house-sitting for the
summer,
And all along, I'm reading all of these great quotes from this author. I even stopped and looked up who this author was. And it's like, this author doesn't exist. Yeah. And lo and behold, it's Clark.
Yeah.
And you're actually writing as Clark, too.
Yeah. It was so fun because this is my fourth book and they've all been sort of contemporary, realistic, first person. And he's a fantasy novelist. So it was so fun to get to jump in for a page here and a page or two there and be in a totally different world and write in a third person and write in a different kind of feeling to it. So I loved being able to dip into that here and there.
did you write what you wrote to go along with the story, or did it just sort of coalesce together?
I tend to write sort of from beginning to end. And I think I wrote most of this as I was writing. I think maybe two of them. When I wrote the first draft, I just sort of had placeholder Clark excerpt and kept on writing Andy's story. And then I think when I finished the first draft, went back and sort of wrote in ones that I thought would fit.
Because he's already got two books mm-hmm. that are part of this fantasy series. Yeah. Would you have to outline that to even think in those terms?
I didn't. I mean, I sort of vaguely knew kind of the big things of his first two books and vaguely what happened. But yeah, I kind of knew the general arc of those two books. But yeah, it was so fun to get to play it being a fantasy novelist for
right,
a few pages.
Because that's so different than what
so different.
Your norm.
Yeah.
And just like Andy, Clark is struggling too. Mm-hmm. He feels like maybe the two stories he's written have already maxed him mm-hmm. out. Why did you decide to get Andy to help him write the other story, which you've got three stories uh-huh. going on now, to kind of help with that?
When I started thinking about Andy and this character who was very guarded, I wanted her to sort of be paired opposite someone who I thought would kind of shake her out of her sort of normal routine and kind of not put up with her normal, not go along with kind of the way that she has always interacted with guys and her sort of relationship patterns. So I wanted someone who sort of had a totally different experience from her growing up. And I love in my stories and any other story I read when two people can sort of learn from each other and help each other and sort of push each other's buttons in the best way. And so I did want him to sort of be helping her be more real and more vulnerable. And also, well, I want her to also help him. Like, I don't want this to be a one-way street. And I feel like so many of my characters and so many just characters you read in books are all readers, because if you're a writer, you're a reader. And so I think we tend to write about people who are like ourselves. And so I wanted to write about someone who wasn't a reader. She's very sort of math and science and logical. And so it was fun to have their conversations when she's like, just write your book. What's the problem? Like, you just do it, write it. Because she's like, you just study, you do your homework. She sort of doesn't understand. So it was fun to have them sort of talk about writing, someone who's mm-hmm. kind of in the process of it and someone who's like, no, just write your story.
Yeah.
What's
just,
the problem?
It's a formula. It's just like anything else. That's
exactly.
just the way it works.
Exactly. So that was
and
fun.
She does help him with that. Mm-hmm. And through that, she doesn't talk about anything deep. He's recognizing, and his experience is so different than hers mm-hmm. because he was homeschooled, mm-hmm. lived in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. basically is sort of a bookworm. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really understand about her friends mm-hmm. and how important that is mm-hmm. because he's never experienced that.
Right. I liked that sort of he got to have this kind of high school summer that he never had, hanging out with a group of friends and having these sort of inside jokes and, you know, kind of going along with her and her friend group. He was fun to write about just because he was really adult in a lot of ways, just because he's sort of been a professional since he was 14 and, you know, is in this adult profession where he's working with, you know, other professionals, even though he's 19 in the book. But he's really young in some ways, too, because he got his GED when he was really young. And so he sort of never had some of these other high school experiences. I liked writing Clark. He was a fun sort of paradox. And it was also, I've never written about another novelist before. So it was, I think it was fun for me to be able to channel some of that into a character.
What would this other person do? How I do it with this other person?
Yeah, so that was fun. Just because I feel like you spend so much time doing what you do. And it's fun to get it into a book somehow.
As well as Andy is having trouble with her father. Mm-hmm. Clark also has a big issue, mm-hmm. but it's more because his dad's not happy with his mm-hmm. success.
Yeah. It was fun to write about sort of going in knowing why Clark was having writer's block, but knowing the character didn't know yet and sort of wouldn't put it together until the end. I mean, I think that it was one of those things where his father always thought he would be this successful novelist. And I think Clark just started writing because it was what his dad was doing and he wanted to sort of be with his dad. And then his book took off and his father never had success at that. And so I think even if you have the best of intentions, I think that can't help but, especially, you know, if your son is doing this and he's so young and he's become this phenomenon, mm-hmm. you know, I think that for some people, I think they might not be able to handle that very well.
Do you think Clark ever worried that in writing their Carl mm-hmm. and Marjorie story that he and Andy would get to that point?
I don't think so. I think that was sort of her way of getting him to think about, you know, to begin to sort of break down his writer's block, because she starts challenging him and she's like, you really can't tell me a story, you couldn't finish this sentence right now, you know. And of course then they start making up this story sort of as they go together, and that's sort of the beginning of how he breaks through his writer's block. But so I think it was just something that started for them of I don't think he thought about it at all. I think it was just
kind of the fun.
Yeah.
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 And just getting past that.
Uh-huh.
Well, you write in the book about a big scavenger hunt.
Yes.
And this is like a tradition.
Uh-huh.
Is that something that you did?
You know, I've been on them when I was a kid, but nothing like that. It was funny because I always knew I wanted to do this. And it was in my head like, oh, they'll do the scavenger hunt. And it's the longest book I've ever written. I think it's 518 pages. And since I do write in order, I was getting to the point where the scavenger hunt was going to come. And it was already running late and I was already, you know, threatening to miss my deadline. And this is, it's a long scene. I think it might be close to 50 pages or something. And I was kind of like, am I really going to stop the story for 50 pages to write a scavenger hunt? It's not really going to advance the plot. Like, what am I doing? And I was like, maybe I could just sum it up, you know, just write a little like, and then on the 4th, we had a scavenger hunt and Palmer organized it and we won, and just sort of do like a little summation paragraph. But I got to the point and I was like, nope, I want to write it. Like, I don't care if it gets cut. Like, I've been looking forward to writing the scene for so long. And then when I turned the book into my editor, I said, you know what, you're probably going to cut the scavenger hunt scene. And that's fine, but I wanted to write it. And he was like, no, that's the crux of the whole story.
Exactly.
And I, you know, I knew there was a reason I wanted to write it, but I don't think I knew why. And he was the one who was like, oh, no, this is sort of the way the story turns. Like, we need this. And so I was like, oh, I'm glad I wrote it then.
Absolutely, because, you know, that's when the friend group changes. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a bad thing,
right.
But it does change. Mm-hmm. And her dad becomes
part of it. Yep.
So it really is a very important part of the book.
All I knew is I wanted to write the scene. I thought it would be fun. But I honestly thought it was going to get cut because I was like, it's so long. And the story kind of stops. And they just do this one night for a long time. And now I'm hearing from readers who are like, oh, I want to do my own scavenger hunt.
Oh, absolutely.
Like some people have been doing ones from the book and sending me pictures of like the old coins they find and stuff like that. So it's been a lot of fun.
You made it very hard. I mean, it would be hard to find some of those items
and
just
was,
in everyday life.
Yeah, it was hard to think of what should be on the list. It definitely took me a while to come up with the things and what they should be and something that's possible but not too easy. And that took me a day or two, I think, to sort of figure out the list and make it final.
Did anything happen like that to your group of friends that caused the group to change? Because you said that you went like with 6 girls from high school.
Oh, no. What happens with Bree and Toby is absolutely what happened to 2 of my friends. I basically didn't make anything up, which is why my friend was like,
oh,
isn't
okay.
that what happened with Dan and Tiffany and Kara? And I was like, maybe. But yeah, I just sort of lifted that and dropped it in.
Because you could see that happening to a group of friends and how that would make everything change,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they've spent basically all summer together.
Right.
At Clark's,
mm-hmm.
in the pool,
yep.
doing everything together. And they've been together since kindergarten?
Bree and Toby met in kindergarten. Andy joined in 3rd grade. And then they met Palmer in 7th. So they sort of added people as they went. But so they'd been together for, you know,
a long time.
Big portion of their lives. I think all of them define themselves maybe a little bit too much by this group and their friendship. And
mm-hmm.
so I don't necessarily think it was a 100% bad thing that it happened. But no, and it was interesting to write sort of the end scene on the bus. I mean, that was sort of the scene I kept working on and kept working on and kept working on, and we kept revising. And I think it was so hard because it's a major event for Andy, but it's not directly happening to her. It's happening to 2 of her friends. And so I really sort of had to be able to be on both people's point of view, and I didn't want anyone to be the bad guy. And it was a balance that I feel like I kept going back to try and get right.
Now, one of the things, and this is before that, is Andy reads her dad's autobiography,
mm-hmm.
and realizes just how false it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's come into her summer, actually grounded her,
mm-hmm.
because he doesn't realize what's going on in her life.
Right.
And she goes, who is this person?
Yeah. I think that's why I've always been so fascinated by, you know, political children. You know, what is it like to, you know, be at the press conference and then be at home in the kitchen? Like, what's the difference and how do you bridge that? So this was sort of my chance to explore that. And in my mind, there was sort of a ghostwriter who wrote his book. You know what I mean? I think it was one of those things where he probably did a couple interviews with a writer who then basically wrote it for him.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I did sort of want the dichotomy of who is this person on the page? They sound so great. That's not the person that I'm talking to in the kitchen. And then, you know, you get to see them close the distance between them a little bit over the course of the book.
And another person who's not really in the book because she's already passed away, mm-hmm. is Andy's mother. Andy's mother was a painter,
mm-hmm.
and she leaves an unfinished painting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Andy saw that as sort of her mother's unfinished life?
Oh, that's interesting. In the first draft, there were more flashbacks. So you actually got to see more scenes with the mom. And my editor was like, we don't need them. Like, we're getting enough from the story. We don't need to, you know, keep flashing back. And so a lot of the scenes where she had memories of her mother were actually scenes in the first draft. I just sort of liked the idea of a painting that wasn't finished or had a little bit of mystery to it or a story that wasn't quite told. And she thought she would sort of never get the end of the story. And then she does.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. So it felt like sort of like a final gift in a way mm-hmm. that she sort of didn't think would happen.
One of the terms that you used I thought was very interesting is coin of the realm.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean?
Coin of the realm is basically like something that has a lot of value. You know, if you were saying everyone in my family is funny, like humor is the coin of the realm with us, that like this is your currency for whatever group you're in. I just always liked that phrase. So I liked weaving it into the book and then it pays off sort of at the very end. I mean, I think it speaks to sort of the different little families you form with people, Andy and her friends, what would be the coin of the realm with them or with her and her father or, you know, all these different sort of groups that form.
As the summer progresses, Andy realizes that she's made a big change, and that actually happened to you, I think, in choosing to become a dog walker, which she realizes she really doesn't want to do this job, but she's trying to impress the business owner anyway, which I thought was interesting. But I think I read that that happened to you as well, that you had planned something and then you worked someplace for the summer.
Oh, yeah. So I had a lot of sort of odd jobs in high school, and I had this one where I was working at a, like on the fuel dock of a yacht club. So it's like a floating gas station and I hated it. But it was like one of those things where, you know, I'd gotten this job, you know, in March or something. And then the summer came and after the first week, I was like, this is the worst thing. I hate it. This is awful. And I fell off the dock one day and you're just in this water that's covered in oil and it was awful. And so I quit and I was just, but then I was sort of like, I don't know what I'm going to do. This was the summer before my senior year. I ended up getting a job with one of my very good friends because she needed a job too. And so we ended up working together and at this smoothie shop. And it was great. And it was honestly like the best summer job. We still talk about it. She's a doctor now. I saw her last week and we're like, remember when we worked at smoothie time? And we're like, that was the best. And so it's sort of one of those things of you think something's going to be awful and then it ends up being this sort of wonderful
and almost a life-changing experience, especially for Andy.
Yeah,
because it really does change the course of her career choices and everything else that she decides to do.
And my editor and I talked about, were it not for this summer, like we talk about that she and her dad might never have sort of bridged because she only has one more summer before she goes to college. And, you know, we sort of talked about like they both needed this summer to get back to each other again. Otherwise, they might not ever have kind of connected.
Because Andy would be starting college mm-hmm. and, you know, her dad is going back on the campaign trail.
Yep.
And we see that all too often mm-hmm. where people split just mm-hmm. because they don't have time together.
Yeah, and then you sort of reach the point of no return and you don't even realize it maybe until that moment has sort of passed. So we talked a lot about that sort of this was the summer that everyone kind of needed.
And there were a lot of changes and then Andy starts to get scared again
mm-hmm.
and realizes that, yeah, I changed my plan once, mm-hmm. but...
Yeah. Some readers have getting frustrated with, like, why is she going back to her old way? But, I mean, I really think change is sort of, it's very rarely steps in one direction. I mean, I think you change and then you get scared and you backtrack. And change that's going to last tends to be more incremental and full of backsliding and zigzagging. And I think it's rare to sort of go on a new path and never look back or get frightened or turn back. That was important to me, that sort of kind of she realizes that, you know, everyone, her dad might be leaving, Clark might be leaving, and sort of why have I been abandoning these things that I'd been following and had been working for so long. So that was important to me to show that it's not just you change two things and then you're all good, that sometimes it's a much more incremental process.
And one of the ways that you kind of wrap that up was to use a character from Clark's book, Tasman,
uh-huh.
and she... The statement is, everyone leaves. Believing you're not alone is the cruelest trick of all. And I thought, oh, that's just so hard. Do you think that that's something she really believed?
In Clark's book?
No, I mean Andy.
Oh.
Yeah, because she starts to read Clark's books
right,
and really
right.
gets into them. I can just see her coming to this and going, you know, you're right. Being alone is you're always alone.
I don't think so, just because she always had her friends. But when things start to get rocky with them, I think that's one of the reasons why she sort of reacts the way she does with Clark, is that when the foundation of her friendships starts to crumble, that that had sort of been her bedrock for so long. And so I don't think she would have agreed with that just because she's had, you know, such a strong friend group and they've sort of been her family in a way. They've sort of taken on that role with her father being absent. So I don't think she would have agreed with that, but I think maybe in the moment when it seems like everything's falling apart, that might have resonated a little bit more.
And I know you don't usually write in series, but after writing as Clark, have you considered that? Or even a fantasy series or something completely different?
I mean, I haven't talked to my editor about this, but I would love to do, I don't know, like a little 50-page something from his book. Or I would just sort of love to have, I don't know how we would do it, or if it would be like an ebook, or I don't know. But I just think it'd be really fun to sort of like write the first 50 pages of The Coin of the Realm and kind of get to explore that a little bit. Rainbow Rowell did that. She wrote the book Fangirl, which has a fictional series in it, and you see excerpts from it. And then she wrote the book, Carry On, which is like the book they talked about in Fangirl, but it's a whole book. And I don't know if I would ever be able to actually write a 400-page fantasy novel, but I'd like to do a little bit of it. I think that would be fun.
Well, you made me curious. I mean, yeah, I'd like to know more about these characters, so I mean...
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Now, you're in L.A.,
in
so
LA.
That's TV land.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about a series for...
As one of my books, you mean, to adapt?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't think they really lend themselves. You know, I've had conversations with people, and, you know, they don't have kind of that one sort of hook. They're more kind of, this is what happens over the course of the summer, and stuff happens, but it's not... There's drama, but it's more, I think, about a girl kind of discovering something about herself or realizing something about herself. You know, I think that the stuff that generally gets made is something with a really strong hook and something that you can kind of explain in 5 seconds and, you know. So I don't think it's a great fit, but I think that's okay. Like, I like sort of there's some of my favorite books have never been made into movies, and I kind of love
right.
that they get to just exist, you mm-hmm. know, as I see these characters in my head. And but then there's some amazing adaptations that feel like they deepen the story so much, but... I think it's okay that they're books for the moment. That's fine with me.
What's next?
So I'm working on another book right now, and that was really inspired by Palmer, actually, one of Andy's friends, because Palmer's the youngest of five, and there used to be a lot more in there about Palmer's older siblings, and I knew all about them, and I was always putting stuff in about them, and my editor was like, we never meet these characters. Please stop telling us about the main character's friends' older brothers and sisters. Like, we really don't need that level of depth in this story. But I knew all about them, and I was sort of fascinated by that idea of a big family. So that's what my new book is about. It's about a girl who, I mean, I don't think this is going to be out until 2018, so all of this might change. But it's about a girl who's the youngest of five and who's the only one still left at home. And sort of what that is to grow up with these older brothers and sisters and be part of this big, you know, boisterous family and then have it be just you, like suddenly you're an only child for the first time in your life. It all takes place over a weekend where her older sister is getting married. And so everyone is sort of coming back to the house and there's drama with the family that's coming up. It has the most sort of farcical elements that things are always going wrong and there's a lot of on a shorter time frame. So that's been a lot of fun to work on and sort of think about this family and who they are. And of course, there's other stuff going on with the family that she realizes over the course of the weekend. And so that's sort of the next thing I'm working on.
How did you decide what age group you were going to write for? And how difficult is it to write for the age that you write for?
I had always been a reader, but had sort of never thought about being a writer. And I was writing plays. I was a theater major, English minor, and was writing more sort of theatrically focused things, but never prose. And then I took a job when I was in college at an independent bookstore, and I worked in the children's department. And that was sort of my first real exposure to YA, because they're young adult literature, because there had been a renaissance since I had been in high school. You know, in the time between I had, you know, been in high school and being in college, the genre had just sort of taken on this amazing life. And I loved it. And I just fell in love with these young adult novels and started writing my own at night for fun. And it was, oh, it's terrible, in a drawer somewhere. But I was having so much fun with it that I was sort of like, okay, maybe this is something I want to explore. And there's a book by the writer Natalie Goldberg called Writing Down the Bones. She talks about composting, about how you need to sometimes let things settle and settle and settle before you can write about them. And so I started writing young adult literature when I was, I think, 25. And so I feel like it was 10 years I was able to actually write about being 15. And so I feel like I have enough perspective now to write about high school. But yeah, I don't know if I have anything to say about, you know, being an adult yet. Maybe in 20 years I'll be able to. But I love writing YA and I love writing sort of these 17-year-old characters. There's just so many places the story can go. And there's such a hopefulness, I think, just because you are writing about someone who's kind of at the beginning of their life. And so, you know, people ask me, do you talk to teenagers? Like, how do you? And mostly I think I'm writing about myself. Like, I'm writing about the issues that I'm having right. with my friends and my family and, you know, currently. But then I'm also bringing in, like with this book, things that happened to me and my friends in high school. So I think it's a combination of both the past and also sort of what's coming up kind of in the present. So I think it's a combination of the two.
We have reached the end of our time for Book Talk today. I want to say thank you to our guest, Morgan Mattson, the author of The Unexpected Everything, published by Simon & Schuster. The book is the story about Andy Walker, her friends, and what happens as her carefully planned summer of studying pre-med turns into one of self-discovery. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752. You can find information on upcoming tapings and broadcasts of Book Talk, as well as download podcasts at our blog, WIPLFMBookTalk.blogspot.com.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.